CBS correspondent David Schonbrun's interview with the president to be broadcast May 24th. From the president's office in the White House, May 11th, 1962.
Mr. President, for the past few weeks, we've been traveling across the land trying to find out how our country will be affected by the trade bill, what our fellow citizens thought about it. It occurred to us that nobody travels as much as you and knows this country as well as you. What do you find in your travels?
Well, I know that nearly every American realizes that we have to trade. It's the way we maintain our dollar balances, our gold. It's the way we maintain and pay for our commitments overseas. I think they realize how much it means to the economy. What they are concerned about is that we pay very good wages in this country in most of our industries, and they want to make sure that in any trade bill that we do not find ourselves flooded by cheap goods. The fact is that in the legislation, as it's been developed, I believe there are very adequate protections. And I think that this is going to mean far more jobs than any trade bill in the past, and can mean a great deal to the United States economically, in the way of jobs, production, and also in the way of our national security.
Mr. President, most people seem to be most concerned about Japan, which is the great symbol of cheap labor. What's the answer on the Japanese?
Well, it's strange. I know that they're concerned about Japan, and there isn't any doubt that in some areas Japan can make rather cheap goods, but I don't think most people realize that we sold last year $500 million more goods to Japan than they bought from us. For the last 4 or 5 years, we sold them $1.5 billion more than we took into this country. Japan's been one of our best customers. What we forget is that we have the most productive industry and labor in the world. We have raw materials, we have power, which is cheap, and transportation by sea is not so expensive. So we may be far away from Japan, and we may be pay higher wages. They don't have our raw materials, they don't have our power. So that we've been able to sell Japan far more. In fact, all the letters I get from Japan is saying, why don't we buy some more from them?
It struck me going around the country and having been in Europe so much that something peculiar seems to be going on. I sometimes get the feeling, Mr. President, that Europe, the old country, is now the new country, and that our country is becoming the old country. Do you get a feeling that America really has to re-examine and move forward so much more quickly now?
Well, I don't accept the view. I think we're a very young country, but what is happening in Europe is very extraordinary. That and the fact that almost 50 new nations have emerged in the last 20 years are the two most extraordinary events of this whole almost century. And Europe is moving ahead. Its economic growth rate is twice ours. It has full employment, and it is building a close economic and political union. And this can have the most far-reaching beneficial consequences to us, because the strengthening of Europe has been a basic policy of the United States since the end of the Second War. But on the other hand, we have to have the tools to deal with that new Europe, or otherwise they will be isolated from us with all the adverse effects upon our security. That's the great question now before us in this trade bill.
Many people seem confused, Mr. President, about what you talk about when we mention the common market. They seem to think you want to join the common market. What is your objective?
Well, the common market, of course, is going to be the unity, ultimately, of the great productive countries of Europe. They form the greatest growing market, in a sense, in the world. They have very few refrigerators compared to us, very few cars, very few television sets. They're going to be a tremendous market. Now, what we have to do is to have the tools to negotiate with that market so that our goods can get behind their tariff wall. When Franklin Roosevelt first put in the reciprocal trade, and it was passed in President Truman's administration and other times, President Eisenhower's, we dealt with a number of different countries individually. Now we deal with one great trading unit which may be larger than the United States and which is growing faster than the United States and can be the most extraordinary source of strength to us. And what I'm concerned about is that we might get locked out of that market. And then what will happen is that American industrialists, instead of investing here and selling their goods in Europe, will say, let's build a plant in France or Italy or Germany. And we'll lose the capital, the gold, and the jobs. So this is we stand at a crossroads now. And I think if we don't get this legislation, we can't deal with that market. We're going to be locked out. And Latin America will be locked out. And it could have the most far-reaching implications for our future.
What would be the purpose of the legislative tool? To trade with them, industry by industry?
It would be to trade, in a sense, across the board with this one great unit. Instead of dealing industry by industry, separate country by separate country. And it's interesting to realize that the common market itself has been through this experience. All these countries which had particular tariff arrangements have gradually dropped them. Until now, at least in the next few years, there'll be no tariffs between them and only a wall around them. Now, will we be over that and through that wall or not? That's the question. Now, this may seem like a rather academic or economic argument, but look at agriculture. We sell to Europe about $1.9 billion worth of our agricultural commodities. We only bring in $200 million. About 25% of all the things we grow in this country get shipped abroad. Now, if we can't get into that market, every farmer in the United States, cotton, tobacco, peanuts, wheat, grain, everything, will suffer. And if we can't get into the market with our automobiles, if we can't get in with machine tools and all the rest, we'll lose a tremendous market, which is very essential. Then we will lack the dollars to pay to keep our defense commitments in Europe and around the world. What people don't realize is that the United States has had a great balance of trade. In the last 12 years, we're probably the only country in the world that has sold more than we've bought every year except one. We can compete. We're selling to Western Europe today twice as much as we buy from them. So we can compete with them. Their wages are going up now fast, and we've got all these resources, and I think we can go in there and meet them as we have in the past head on. But if we have to pay a tariff in addition, those jobs are going to Europe.
And isn't it true, Mr. President, that they can't go on indefinitely buying American goods unless we buy their goods?
Yes, we buy these goods now. But I would think you could go through every state of the Union, which we have done, and make a chart of what they sell and what they buy. There isn't a state in the Union, really, that doesn't gain from this kind of trade. We talk about the economic, but there's also the political. At a time when Russia and China are dividing, and the communist world, Albania, the Soviet Union, are having great difficulties, here is this tremendous rise in power of Western Europe. And Western Europe and the United States will be the greatest productive power the world's ever seen. We cannot permit ourselves to be separated from them and have all of the effort we've made for so long to have this powerful, free Europe move away from us rather than with us. So that's why this legislation is important.
And in effect then, sir, you are building a bridge, a two-way bridge between the common market of Europe and the common market of the USA.
Yes, we have a common market. That was really the purpose of our Constitution. We don't pay tariffs as we go from New York to Pennsylvania. And in those areas, and this is an original piece of this legislation, in the past when we've had imports come in which have presented difficulties to our industry, we haven't really had very much we could do for those industries. Now we have adopted the same provision that the common market did before us. We're assisting these industries, loans, we're making them help make them competitive, we're helping the workers, retraining when necessary, and all the rest. So that I'm very hopeful about this, and I think what is perhaps most important is it is a nonpartisan piece of legislation. It belongs to the Republicans as much as the Democrats. Mr. Herder, the former Secretary of State, was a leader in this present effort. General Eisenhower has fought for it, so that I believe we have a good chance.
Mr. President, some of the critics of this bill think that you're getting more power sitting here in this desk, that you will decide just by yourself, without any check at all, on how we trade and what businesses can be kept in and put out of business. What could you answer to that?
Well, the administrations, as I say, since Roosevelt's have had the responsibility, and it's not a welcome one, to carry on these negotiations over a long period of time with other countries in regard to trade. All we are attempting to do is to write a bill which will permit us to trade with an enormous trading area instead of a number of small countries. And number two, which will give us assistance in protecting our own people. Now, in my opinion, the power is very limited. It is not excessive. The congressional control and a delegation of the power, let's start again. In my opinion, the power is not excessive at all. This is a very difficult effort to carry on. We are very conscious of the welfare of the United States, as is every man who's ever sat here. We're going into these negotiations to protect our interests and the security of our country and those associated with us. if you give us no power to carry on these negotiations, then we can't make any arrangements. If you, so that we have not asked for more power than we need, and it, to be honest with you, it is not a power particularly that is especially welcome. But how else are we going to carry on a negotiation with this great market unless someone goes and, speaking for the United States, says, here's what we're prepared to do, what are you prepared to do? And the fact is that if we fail, if we don't get the legislation, or if we get the legislation in a form where we're hamstrung, we'll be shut out of this market. And those who have expressed the greatest concern will see American companies investing in Europe, making their product there, and costing us jobs here. We're either in at the beginning or we're never going to get in, and I think that that's why I regard this as the most important piece of legislation before the country this year.
Mr. President, when you say that you want to be in a position to say to them, here's what I'm prepared to do, what are you prepared to do, I assume you're talking about much more than tariffs.
Well, we're talking really about the whole relationship between the West and the United States. Together, this is half a billion people. 90% of the industrial power of the world is in this group. This is a tremendous force in a great struggle, and I want to be sure that we work in concert with Western Europe and not divide into two struggling camps. And in addition, all this affects Latin America a great deal. Latin America depends on the Western European markets. If they're shut out of the common market because of this tariff wall, if we're not in a position to assist them in coming in too, you'll have governments going bankrupt right and left. So it involves our national security as well as our economic well-being.
Sir, is it your purpose and your hope that over and above trade and business, that the Europeans, who are now prospering largely thanks to our help, will help carry a part of the share of helping the developing nations? We've been doing that job almost alone.
One of the big questions I think that Europe faces is whether the common market in this new strong Europe is going to look in, or whether it's going to look out. We've been carrying this load a very long time, and I don't suggest that we should lay it down, but I do suggest that there are others who have now become prosperous, whose gold balances have been built up. I'd like to see them bear the burden. This is not a private struggle. This is a struggle for the freedom of the world. And if they're not ready to bear their share, the United States can't do it alone. We're 6% of the world's population. You know, we have 6 divisions stationed in Western Europe to defend it. Western Europe's a large area. It's as large as the Soviet Union. But there hasn't been an effort made by most of the countries there in their own defense comparable to what we've made. And yet we carry obligations in Latin America and Africa and Asia. Now, the time is coming when the Western Europeans have to decide, are they going to join in a large way in this effort? Because the United States cannot continue to carry it alone. And the United States helped build them up, and now we're asking them to join us in this effort and not expect that this country, however rich it may be, but it is, after all, only a portion of the world, that we're going to be able to go alone on it. We can't do it. They're going to have to join us. And if they don't, all will be the losers. But that's another reason why we have to remain in the closest concert with them.
And we hope, Mr. President...
Excuse me, Senator,
yes?
We're almost at the end.
All right. This is the last one.
Would you watch the chair? We're picking up the room
pipes. Right. Mr. President, in this complex world in which we live, the military establishment and weaponry has drained off a tremendous amount of science and technology. Is there hope, and is it your purpose, to see that as much science and technology as possible can be directed to the civilian sector so that we can increase our production and enter this trade avenue?
Well, there's a tremendous drain on our available scientific manpower, space, military, on the other hand, a good deal of the governmental research is of great assistance to industry. The whole electronics industry has come out really of efforts originally made by the government. What's true there in the field of health, in many other areas, the actions that we are taking help the general economy. One of the other difficult problems that we have is the necessity to modernize our plants. Many of these European plants were rebuilt after World War II. They have fast write-offs. And the United States must make sure that its tax structure stimulates growth. What I want to say in closing is that What I want to say in closing is, this is a matter that we should be optimistic about. Western Europe went through this whole question of its tariff arrangements, as we now are, a few years ago. And the result has been that in the six countries of the common market today, they are searching for people in order to find people to work. In those six countries, there is no unemployment, as I've said. There's a steady buildup of their gold. There's a steady increase in their industrial power. And we can participate in that effort to our own well-being. We will find hundreds and thousands more jobs out of this effort than we have dreamed. And I, therefore, am most grateful for the effort which has been made by the men and women in both of our political parties to try to keep this issue in front of the country as a matter of the highest national priority, as President Eisenhower has said on many occasions.
Thank you very much, Mr. President, for letting us come to see you today.